Kehinde Wiley's monumental portraits of young African-American men using the poses and conventions of traditional European portraiture have created quite a stir in the art world, and now the first museum survey of his career has been mounted at the Brooklyn Museum. It not only includes some of his most well-known paintings, but also some newer work, portraits of women, stained glass windows, and bronze busts. Kehinde Wiley, A New Republic, will be on view at the Brooklyn Museum until May 24th, and I'm very pleased that has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
How does it feel to have a museum survey? This is different than a solo. You've had a solo show of your work at the tender age of, what, 37, 38?
38. It feels great. It's an opportunity in many ways to look back over the years and recognize a lot of those key changes in the work that have occurred. It also kind of makes me feel old. It's one of those things. It's coming at the age of 38 and allows you to at once feel as though the work has evolved and changed in many ways, but also comes at a point in which you kind of want to be able to step back a bit more.
Well, the way to resolve that is just not do as much work as you have in the past. You grew up in Los Angeles. At what age did you know you wanted to be an artist?
You know, I've been painting since I was 11 years old. My mom sent me to art school when I was a kid, and ever since then I've been.
But then you came east. You studied at Yale and did a residency at the Studio Museum in Harlem. Was that where you began doing the kind of large-scale portraits we now think of as your signature work?
It was indeed. In fact, it was in Harlem where I would leave my studio every day trying to get a sense of the city. I would go out into 125th Street and stop complete strangers in the streets, asking them if they wouldn't mind looking at photographs of my work and asking them if they wouldn't mind modeling for me. And most people, in fact, say no.
Did some of them think that you really something else was going on there?
I don't know. It's a tough thing. I've been doing this type of street casting not only here in New York but increasingly all over the world. And you'll find that people in large cities, by and large, have a large city mentality when it comes to complete strangers stopping them in the streets.
We've learned that one of WNYC's employees, Darnell Jefferson, posed for one of your paintings.
That's right. In fact, it was a really great surprise to see Darnell this morning in the lobby. It's one of those things where, as the years go, and as I continue painting, you get a chance to see a good cross-section of New York and the different people's lives that you encounter.
You were given a major opportunity by Jeffrey Deitch, who helped out so many young artists when he had his Soho gallery. But let's talk a bit about the work. They're paintings of young black men in poses taken from classical paintings. How did you come up with the idea?
I love classical painting. I love 18th and 19th century British and French portraiture. I love the artifice of society portraiture, the artificiality that goes into all of that chest beating that you see there. As a child, I remember going to the Huntington Library and Gardens in Los Angeles and looking at paintings like Pinky and Blue Boy, looking at a lot of those society portraits and thinking, what's up with the lapdogs and the powdered wigs and the jewels? There was a sense of...
So you want to be the Joshua Reynolds of America?
Well, it wasn't about being a Joshua Reynolds. It was about interacting with all that status anxiety. You know, I was coming from South Central Los Angeles, not necessarily engaging with the social elite. This was a way of stepping into an alternate reality that existed centuries ago.
Was it also as simple as thinking that you weren't seeing portraits of people in museums who looked like the people you knew?
Decidedly so. I mean, there was something really amazing going to Los Angeles County Museum of Art and encountering a Carrie James Marshall painting. One of my first times seeing a painting that large of young black men on view. It's pretty striking to be able to engage with someone who looks like you in a museum.
But why replace the subjects of these old European paintings with young black men rather than paint them in their own environment? And you could include dogs and whatever else the British and French painters included.
My investigation is one about history. It's about the dominance and the control of painting, the fact that painting functioned in many ways as a type of propaganda act. my work is, insofar as it critiques the past, it also embraces the material practice of painting historically. And what I really want to do is to at once wrap my arms around my true and abiding love for painting, but also step directly into that circle, contend with the language and the look and feel of actual paintings from the past.
Because if you don't have the painting chops, these things are not very effective.
I think so. I mean,
but by putting these young men into these paintings, were you making a political statement, a gesture of conferring power on many people who aren't always, who can often be considered powerless?
Everything's political in art, and I could be painting a bowl of fruit, and that would be politicized. There has to be a way in which we look at black bodies in public space in a politicized way, and my responsibility is to point to it in a way that says something positive or negative. I embrace both the beautiful and terrible past, but I also want to be able to point to something redeeming.
So when you go out street casting, as you called it, does that mean that you just see somebody who you think might be interesting? Why that person, not the next person?
You know what, Leonard? You know it when you see it. There really is no one type. There's a state of grace. There's a sense of self-possession that people have. It's really one of the best things that can happen in my practice, because you know from that very moment that this is going to be an amazing painting. And it's that moment of chance that gives rise to this entire project. So much of the portraiture of the past had to do with people who had the means and wherewithal to create these large statements of their position in life. This is about someone minding their own business, trying to get to the train, and the next thing you know, they're hanging in the Brooklyn Museum.
There's a collaborative aspect as well. Don't you have them look through art history books and choose the pose that they would want to strike or the painting that they'd like to be in?
And this gets to the point of ceding a bit of power. As the artist, you have to be able to have this collaborative conversation with the sitter. Traditionally, artists have always had the role of deciding everything within those paintings, and I think it's really interesting to be able to have features of the model's taste, their choice. Sure, all of these art history books are mine when we're in the studio, but they're going through and deciding, this is what I respond to. This is a picture of me in the world.
Now, those artists of the past didn't have photography to help them. Do you take pictures, or do you use the old-fashioned method of having them sit there for day upon day?
Well, no one has the time for a painting these days, but what I do is I really do make painting in the 21st century. It starts with photography. I'll then go into Photoshop and heighten and diminish colors. Elements that were there are certainly there. I mean, every one of the people that I meet that day are wearing the clothes, the street clothes that they had on that day. But there are moments where I like to toy with the viewer. So there will be, for every painting that is true to that narrative, one picture that's been completely manufactured, a picture in which there has no relationship to the actual. So for every show in which all of the models are coming from Nigeria, let's say, there will be one kid from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. You as the viewer never really know if you're getting something else.
Kehinde Wiley's survey of his work, A New Republic, is at the Brooklyn Museum. Be there until May 24th. These portraits often have elaborately patterned flowered backgrounds, like kind of like wallpaper.
Mm.
Why did you want to use those kinds of patterns rather than replicate the backgrounds of the original paintings?
Well, the original paintings had landscapes in which the landed gentry would often have their wives, children, cattle, homes, all in equal measure behind them as possessions. I wanted to narrow down that field and break it into these simple colored swatches in which the background is populated by decoration. The decorative field becomes that sort of irrational decorative space. Women's work, this toil of keeping the hands busy so that the mind doesn't go into its nether regions. I also wanted to think about the background as being in competition with the sitter. You always notice in the paintings that the background is sort of fighting for the foreground.
You have tendrils sometimes reaching out around the front of your subjects.
That's right. And the question then becomes, who deserves to be here? The painting in itself functions as a stand-in between the conversation that's going on about deserving to be present.
the titles of these paintings are usually the titles of the works that they're based on, like Napoleon leading the army over the Alps or Saint Andrew. You don't use the names of the subjects.
Oftentimes, I will use the names of the subjects. In fact,
well, the one exception is Portrait of King Philip II, Michael Jackson.
That's a really interesting story where Michael Jackson was actually at the Brooklyn Museum looking at one of my paintings shortly before his death. And we began a conversation around how we can actually discuss the history of art, but also how this history of art could be at service towards picturing celebrity. That's one of the reasons I think that the armor comes into play so heavily there.
Did he ask you to do a painting that included him? You have him pick it?
Yeah. No, in fact, we had this relay conversation back and forth, generally looking at the ways in which equestrian portraiture evolved. Michael was really well informed about the history of painting. I remember him really convincing me that it was better to look at later Rubens than earlier.
Did they ever pick a picture that you don't think you should be doing?
You know, honestly, it's all open. There's thousands and thousands of pictures to choose from, and it's up to them to choose how they want to be seen.
The young men are generally dressed in T-shirts, sports jerseys, jeans or shorts. Sometimes you can even see if they prefer Hanes or Fruit of the Loom. But when you decided to do a series of portraits of women called An Economy of Grace, you had gowns made for them by the House of Givenchy.
That's true. I wanted to look at beauty. I wanted to look at clothing as armor, clothing as both saying something but also hiding something. The history of painting and women painting specifically has much more to do with the male gaze. Women is being displayed oftentimes with their heads turned so that the male eye can draw itself across their bodies, that absolute reveal. In my work, I wanted to at once look at that history but also turn it in on itself, to be able to turn up the volume on the aesthetic aspects of female presence in painting. What happens when beauty itself becomes indicted? You turn it up so much that you have to call in the couture houses. You have to call in Riccardo Tisci to create something that almost falls in under its own weight. The ridiculousness of the type of pomp was something that I wanted to point to.
Are people ever surprised when they see Judith and Holofernes?
I think so. I think it's one of those more violent paintings, although mine is quite understated if you look at some of the...
But it has a racial component to it.
Decidedly so. All of my paintings have a racial component. This one, I think, differs in the fact that there is a white female head that's been eviscerated.
You have set up studios in China and Senegal as well as your studio in Brooklyn?
That's correct.
Why? I know your father, what I've read, you never knew your father growing up. He went back to Africa before you were born, which makes you similar in some ways to the President of the United States.
People say that sometimes, but I think the president has a decidedly more complex story. Mine is that my father came to the United States back in the 1970s, where he studied with my mom. And their relationship ended. He returns to Nigeria. I go on to study art, fall in love in China, open a studio there, discover Africa again, open a studio there, have a studio here in New York as well. There's something really great about being able to wander the world, using that travel to inform your life, inform your sensibilities. Consequently, is also an opportunity to open those doors. This year, we're expanding the studio in Senegal to include three artists-in-residence studios, in which we'll be able to have artists from the United States and Europe, increasingly all over the world, come through and see how West Africa can inform their voices.
You also use a number of assistants.
That's correct.
In the manner of Rubens and other painters of the past. But when the assistants come from different parts of the world, do they bring different sensibilities?
I think so. I think that there's decidedly something to be said about the detail that goes into the flowers. In order to understand my process, you have to understand that I stand on the shoulders of a long line of artists who worked with assistants. And what I do is I paint all of the portraits, and my assistants paint those decorative fields, all of those repeating patterns behind the models. And I find that... if you're dealing with different cultural inflections, you'll find West African patterns, decidedly easier to paint in West Africa, for example.
The show also includes some of your more recent works, including stained glass windows. Are they made from your paintings?
They are not. The stained glass actually starts much in the same way that the paintings do, which is that we go out casting and then allow Photoshop to come to the picture. So now I'm dealing with the entire history of stained glass. But now, as opposed to drawing it out, I'm allowed that many more options on the computer where I can now begin to visualize a full range of possibilities for stained glass.
And you have some smaller portraits, paintings done in the form of religious icons or altarpieces and bronze sculptures. Working in sculpture is very different than working in painting. And
that's right.
A lot of people don't feel that you should mix the two.
Well, I've always been concerned with being able to create a full vocabulary when it comes to my work. I always wanted to be able to take elements of the past as pieces of the alphabet, putting together sentences. And I think that sculpture and stained glass play a vital role in that. It's also having to do with autobiography. When I was 12 years old, my mother sent me off to Russia to study painting in the forest outside of Leningrad in a small town called Lucevo. And when we took our day trips into then Leningrad, I discovered stained glass. I discovered small gilded gold icon paintings. And in many ways, what you see at the Brooklyn Museum is, sure, an embrace of art history, but also an embrace of a personal story.
The show will be on view at the Brooklyn Museum until May 24th. Will it be traveling to other venues after that?
It will. It's on a tour for the next 5 years, and it'll be at 8 different institutions throughout the United States.
So you had to give up your babies for a while.
Well, that's true. There'll be more babies.
Gahinda Wiley will be speaking with DJ Spooky this Thursday at 7 o'clock at the Brooklyn Museum. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at WNYC.org. The show, which is called Gahinda Wiley, A New Republic, is at the museum until May 24th. And my great thanks to Gahinda Wiley for being on our show today.
Thank you, Leonard.